The Gaily Planet, The Final Frontier. These are the voyages of Lark and Jesse, our continuing mission to provide you with humorous yet ruthless analysis, to seek out queer takes and explore every gay subtext, to boldly say what no one has said before. Hello, everyone. I have got some life stuff going on, and so today we are bringing you a re-release of our episode about the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special, The Day of the Doctor. This is a really delightful episode that you are going to love, either listening to for the first time or listening to again if you've already listened. And hopefully things will be back to normal and back on schedule for our next episode. Oh, also, really quick, if you're listening the day that this comes out, this month's sticker is space-themed and magical color-changing. It's so fucking cool. You can see it on our Instagram at #RuthlessPods, but highly recommend, if you've been thinking about joining our sticker club, doing that today, either on our website, #RuthlessPods.com, or by joining one of the sticker tiers on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/#ruthless. It is worth it to get this sticker. It is so cool. Okay, enjoy. Hello, and welcome to The Gaily Prophet, a humorous yet ruthless podcast where two queer IRL witches do whatever the fuck we want. I am Lark Malachi Gray.
And I am Jesse Blount, and today we're talking about Doctor Who!
Woohoo! The best of days.
We decided to bring the people what they want, slash both Lark and I really like Doctor Who, so we're going to be talking about the 50th anniversary episode of Doctor Who, The Day of the Doctor.
Yeah, all right, so this episode, The Day of the Doctor, in which, on Gallifrey, in a face we haven't seen before, the Doctor decides to end the Time War by stealing a super weapon called the Moment, which is so powerful it has developed a conscience. That conscience takes the form of Rose Tyler as Bad Wolf, who decides to talk him out of killing all of his own people by showing him what it will turn him into, aka David Tennant and Matt Smith. She gathers them all together in 1500s England, where an attempted Zygon invasion is underway. More on that later. The three doctors reflect on the whole last of their species thing and have some touching moments, eventually leading them to conclude that it was the right decision after all, but this time they will do genocide together for moral support. Clara, who showed up a little while ago, is like, wait, no, I don't think that was the point, which the moment as Rose agrees with. The doctors realize that they have three TARDISes, which means that they can do some sort of spacey-wacy thing and lock Gallifrey in a pocket universe and let their enemies, the Daleks, kill each other. It probably works. Meanwhile, that whole Zygon invasion thing has been going on. In the 1500s, they hid inside some Time Lord bigger on the inside paintings that they somehow got a hold of, and now in 2013, they've busted out and are going to take over the planet by shapeshifting into the people in charge of the Unified Intelligence Task Force, UNIT, and getting access to the Black Archive, aka the Alien Tech Depot. Kate Stewart, head of UNIT, is going to blow up London to stop them, but the doctors show up to be like, this is actually a lesson for me because it's like my situation in miniature, thanks for the insight, and make everyone forget that if they're human or Zygon so that they have to reach a compromise, which they apparently do, but we don't know what it is because that's not the point of the episode. The end.
Excellent.
Thank you.
That's an excellent summary.
Now we're going to start things off with today's headlines. Doctors say you should avoid this one thing if you want to heal from your trauma. Is crossing your own time stream the thing holding you back from moving on?
Y'all, dudes will cross their own timelines, but won't go to therapy.
All right.
Oh, Jesus.
We turn to the front page where we talk about everything that doesn't go anywhere else. You start.
The very beginning of this episode, 11 suggests to Clara that they could go have, or Clara asks if they could have cocktails on the moon. And I'm like, I would also like to have cocktails on the moon. Thanks. Someone made that happen. Thank you.
Agreed. It's very cute, that mm-hmm. opening scene between the two of them.
Yeah, where she sexually rides into the TARDIS on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Yeah, my first note is that Kate Stewart... So remember in 2013 when you could have different ringtones for different people?
Yeah.
She has a special ringtone for when the doctor is calling her and it's the TARDIS sound.
A plus.
I love that so much. I just love it so much.
A plus plus. Yeah, I think at the height of my Doctor Who... like, previous Doctor Who love, I think I actually did have a chunk of the, like, the intro to 11's Doctor Who theme is, like, my ringtone. But I had to change it, because then when I heard it, it gave me anxiety, because I'm, like, answering the phone, so I don't have ringtones anymore. Because I'm like, I can't have a song that I like, because then I feel anxious when I hear it.
Yeah, totally. Same. Yeah, when I used to have different ringtones for different people, I had some song that I liked as the one that played, like, just for when my family members were calling me. And then, yes, I would get anxiety every time that song came on when I was listening to the CD or whatever. And I was like, this isn't good. This isn't the point. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Modern technology, man. I could not help. So we see a bit of a city in Gallifrey in the Time War in this, like, 3D oil painting Time Lord art. Which I feel like there's a joke about AI in there somewhere that I don't have the brain power to make. But I feel like it looked like a deleted scene from Star Wars. Because a lot of, like, shooting, like, red and green, like, lasers and, like, weird spaceships flying around. And I'm like, okay, y'all. I know it's hard to make a show, to create a scene where it's like you're having a space battle and not somehow have it reference or feel like something from Star Wars. But using the red and the green lasers, I'm like, this is on purpose, probably. Or else you could have used literally any other color.
Yeah, because also, I mean, I know this is Dalek ships and not Daleks themselves, but they're, when they blast people, it's blue. So it would make sense that their ships would be firing blue light things too, although I guess some lightsabers are blue, so
yeah, most of them are blue and green, and if you're evil they're red, and if obviously. you're literally Samuel L. Jackson who requested a purple lightsaber, you have a motherfucking purple lightsaber.
Yeah, it's the best. So
I know, I love him. Anyway.
So I don't know about or care about British royalty, but I do love this, like, running joke where there was apparently a virgin queen, but actually she wasn't the virgin queen because David Tennant married her. The 10th Doctor married her. I guess I should be using numbers. And we see it in this episode, and it's great. And I just want to give, like, a shout out for the part where he like proposes because he thinks that she's the Zygon. He's like trying to trick her and then realizes that it was actually her all along. And then like kind of looks at the camera and is like, oh, I'm going to be king.
Right. Good. And of course, Queen Elizabeth's like, clearly, yes, I would like to jump this like leggy alien.
Yeah.
Dude. Great. Yeah. You don't think that I'm like a weaker person because I'm a lady? Great. And you're hot. Let's do this.
Yeah.
You can be king. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, same, honestly. So. Mm-hmm. There are so many jokes in this episode kind of making fun of sort of the staples of like New Who. Mm-hmm. And I like how, so when I was okay, sorry, side note. What have you been calling the, like, younger/older doctor? Because I just have in my notes is, like, leather doctor, because he's wearing, like, a leather duster.
He's the war doctor.
He's the war doctor.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what the internet, or what the episode says we should call him. That's how he's credited.
Yeah, that's what it said in the summary that I was like, going through, because I'm trying to, like, how do I condense this? And I'm like, the war doctor. Anyway, so the war doctor pointing out how silly it is to point the sonic screwdriver like a gun is an incredible just inside joke about the show, essentially, where I'm like, yes, that is deeply silly. Thank you.
It's so great because the show tries all the time to be like this. What he's like, it's a scientific instrument, not a water pistol. And the show's like, no, it's a screwdriver. It's like, this is science. This is science fiction. And you're like, baby, you're a fantasy show. That's a magic wand. Like, literally, the instructions is point and think, and then it does whatever you need it to do, unless the object you're trying to do something to is wood. That's its one thing that it can't do. And, like, I mean, literally, the War Doctor with 10 and 11, they point their screwdrivers at a Dalek, and fucking light shoots out and blows up a Dalek. That's never happened before. It's a magic wand. So, yes, I love it.
Yeah. I know.
Piggybacking off of that, I love that. So he says, like, what are you going to do? Build a cabinet at them? And just for the record, that is the third time in this, in New Who, that that joke has been made. Jack Harkness makes that joke, and then River Song makes that joke. And I just love it that they're like, why do you call this a screwdriver? Like, why are you so dedicated to calling it that?
The joke never gets old. It's always funny because it is deeply silly to call it a... I mean, I appreciate this like idea where it's like, oh, you know, it's not a weapon, it's a tool. It's like, no, it's a wand, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also like the first two times that it's made, it's someone who has a gun, which is what you need in the circumstance that they're in, being like, you have a screwdriver. What are you going to do? Build a cabinet? And like in that moment, it's a useless screwdriver because someone is there with a more effective weapon and he doesn't have to make it a weapon and can be like, oh, it is a screwdriver. I don't know. I fucking love it. I just love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean... Also, piggybacking off of that, just the bit about 10 and 11 comparing the sizes of their screwdrivers, which, folks, is kind of a euphemism in this regard.
I mean, it's definitely a euphemism because Tenet literally is like compensating for something. Regeneration, it's crapshoot.
So funny. So funny.
Yeah, they do a lot of like the three doctors do a lot of like sniping at each other, kind of whatever, and it's all great. I love all of everything that they're doing, but when 11 is introducing them to like the Queen's Guard or whatever, and he's like, I'm the doctor and these are my co-conspirators Sand Shoes and Granddad.
Yes. And like also a good shout out to whatever episode it is, and it's like, these are my co-conspirators, the nose, the legs, and Mrs. Robinson. Uh-huh. Like, we're friends. Just like, bro.
I think it's your turn.
Okay, so I didn't notice this initially, but I was reading through TV Tropes to get as many of the shout outs that I think that I missed, and I thought that you would appreciate this, in which the head general and when they're on Gallifrey and they're like in the war room is obviously a Picard shout out because he's like a bald dude who has like the like four pips rank of like general on his like collar, just like Picard does.
That's great.
Yeah. And I'm like, you're right. Every sci-fi universe should have a Picard show.
He's like Picard's shadow self. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I feel like the first time I watched this episode, so listeners who haven't watched it, they're like trapped in a cell in the Tower of London in the 1500s, and the door of the cell is made of wood, so they can't use their magic wand to get out. And so they're like, oh, we all have the same sonic screwdriver. It's just been like upgraded over the years. So like we can figure out how to dissolve the door if we like the oldest screwdriver, if the War Doctor scans the door and then like establishes a permanent subroutine doing the math to figure out how to dissolve the door. And then, like, Eleven's screwdriver is 400 years older, and so it will have figured it out, right? Whatever. The first time I heard that, I, like, immediately integrated into my brain the idea of a permanent subroutine to, like, explain that thing that when, you know, when you're, like, having a conversation and you're like, what is that thing that I'm thinking of? I can't remember that name, whatever. And then, like, a week later, all of a sudden, it's like, ping, and you, like, remember it. That's what's happening, is you've just established a permanent subroutine of trying to figure out the name of that person that you can't remember.
Right. Yeah. Now.
And I just love having that. It makes me happy.
Yeah. I feel like that's a little bit of my part of my writing process, where I just think about a thing and then it, like, percolates in the back of my brain. And I'm like, oh, that is what I want. Anyway. Yes. Yep. No. I love that part. Also related to this scene, the scream that I let out, because this is like a 5-minute scene about them figuring out how they're going to evaporate this door, only for Clara to walk in and be like, y'all, this door wasn't locked. There's, like, literally 3 of y'all. Did none of you try the door? And I just... I actually screamed out loud, because it was so funny. Because, like, this sort of sci-fi trickery is, like, a staple of Doctor Who. And then for Clara just to be like, okay, but y'all, for real? It's just so funny. It's so good.
Oh, it really is. It's excellent. All right. So a thing that's true about this episode is that they intended for the Ninth Doctor to be the War Doctor, to be the doctor that had killed everyone, right?
Yeah.
But Eccleston is, like, I don't know, a piss baby about Doctor Who and, like, loves to just complain about everything and wouldn't come back, basically. He, like, wouldn't come back and was like, also, you're not gonna, like, make my doctor the bad doctor. Anyway, so I hope that it's true that when the War Doctor is regenerating and says, I do hope that the ears are a bit less conspicuous this time, it's like an intentional dig.
Oh, no, it is an intention. That is intentionally a dig.
I love it so much.
So, but yeah, you know, just a playful ribbing between Doctor regenerations. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, another excellent, excellent call out.
It's so funny.
All right. I actually don't have anything else in this section.
Cool. Yeah. I just have, which I guess I said in my summary, so it doesn't matter. We just don't, like, they're just like, you don't need to know what happened with the Zygon thing. It's fine. And it does actually come back in Capaldi's season. We get to learn what it was. But, like, just the show's openness to being like, we know that you know that this is not the point of this episode. You don't care what the compromise was. Goodbye.
Yeah.
It's lovely. I love it.
Yeah. It's like, you're here because you are a fan of Doctor Who, potentially, for several decades.
Right.
And you want to see as many doctors on screen as humanly possible.
Yep.
Which is true.
Welcome to the style section, where we talk about aesthetics.
Briefly mentioned this, but I do have to shout out Clara's red dress, leather motorcycle jacket, leather motorcycle gloves combination. I am not immune to a cutie on a motorcycle wearing leather. So
very fair.
It's a great look. Good for her.
Yeah, she does look amazing. Everyone on Gallifrey wears red all the time. No one's allowed to wear any other colors, including all of the children. I'm not sure why about that, aside from, like, they need a way to signify to us that these are, like, Gallifreyan children, and you can tell by all the red.
Maybe that's the, I don't know. Maybe the red dye is one of the biggest imports out of Gallifrey. It's like Time Lords and red dye. I don't know.
They have a non-beetle-based red dye that's deeply in demand on all the vegan planets.
I mean, you know, it's probably very ecologically friendly to only use, like, a red dye that doesn't involve precious stones, metals, literal poisons, or beetles. So, you know, they are supposed to be a more advanced people, so why not?
Very true.
It would also maybe explain the eclectic outfits of the Doctor, where it's like, I'm fucking never wearing all red again, so... before we get into the Doctor's looks, though, I have just a couple more things, which is the one assistant in her obvious nod to the Fourth Doctor with her very large striped scarf, which even before I watched Doctor Who, I was aware of, because there used to be in the 90s this like catalog of like sci-fi merch, because it's the 90s where else you're gonna get your sci-fi merch. And one of the things this catalog had was a like accurate fourth doctor scarf that was like 12 feet long.
Oh my god.
And like, so I would look at it in the catalog and be like, that is like really cool, but also seems very impractical. Yeah. But I was always deeply fascinated by people who wanted this like 12 foot long scarf from a show that I had up to that point had like never even heard of. And I'm like, all right, that seems cool and weird, but all right, folks. I mean, I think this scarf is longer than a normal scarf, but definitely not 12 feet long.
Probably not. No. Yeah. Osgood is a Doctor super fan. She's like one of my favorite recurring characters and wears like different first Doctor Who run based like outfit things in the different times that she shows up on the show. It's really great.
That's adorable. Yeah. She's like read all the files and she's like, this is great. This is my personality now. And I'm like, so many fans can appreciate that. So exactly. Good for her.
So I actually want to do a little crossover thing and say in the sort of museum-y space that they're in the tower, there's like a giant puffer fish that's like illuminated from below. Did you see that? And my immediate thought was like, oh, if only Ed could see that.
the crossover we need, which is the Doctor visits Blackbeard the pirate and he's gay. That would be great.
That would be just so great. It would make me so happy.
So my last bit of not Doctor aesthetic is the extremely boobs out Queen Elizabeth dress they have her in.
Yeah.
I'm like, the first thing I notice is like, that is some really excellent like period wear. And I'm like, wow, your boobs are just all the way out. And it's not, listeners, not literally all the way out, but she is in a corset that is just really making her boobs look great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I have no idea if it's historically accurate or not, but she looks amazing. And it's what I would put on if I were the Queen of England in the 1500s and going on a date with a hot alien. Like, yeah.
Like a date where it's like, here's a picnic and like a horse ride and like enter whatever kind of sexual things that we can do without with me still technically being a virgin who is unmarried. We can do it's a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of things you can do that's not P&V. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Good for her. For real.
So do you want to start with TARDIS control rooms or do you want to start with outfits?
Ooh, we can do either.
I asked the question. You have to pick.
Let's do the TARDIS control rooms. I have it as my notes and there's the living room, but that's not what it's called.
So we see three iterations of, and Tennant inherited his from 9, right? I don't think it changed. I don't think they were planning in the budget to have to build a whole new control room after season 1. So.
Yeah.
And it's really, I found it like really fun to like have all of them available for us to like compare and contrast.
The sort of like nostalgia of seeing like the 10 TARDIS living room, just like, oh, Good times.
Yeah, and Eleven calls it his grunge phase,
which is really funny.
And them getting all nostalgic for quote unquote the round things that are from. Did the TARDIS interface change in the original run, or was it just the same?
I don't know. I don't know when it changed, but because I know that the round things are definitely from like the very first season. And maybe it changed with like 4 or 5 or 6, I think, because we also. Because we get another change in the episode where the TARDIS becomes human or a person shaped temporarily and then in that weird pocket universe.
Yeah.
And I know this because like Moffat realized that there was just like the sets still from like some of the Doctor Who TARDIS sets, like not in a basement, in a room, like somewhere. And they're like, oh, we still have these?
Yeah.
Fucking gonna use this shit.
And that leads to one of my favorite lines from that episode where, like, the TARDIS as woman says something about, like, an interface that she has archived, like, how many she has archived. And the Doctor's like, there haven't been that many. You can't archive something that doesn't exist yet. And she's just like, you can't. Which is really great.
Yeah, that's an excellent episode.
Yeah, outfits.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm really here for the War Doctor's leather coat. Sorry, 10 and 11.
Yeah, he's very... a completely different kind of like sci-fi future show, you know. He stepped out of a post-apocalypse show.
I was waffling between if he stepped out of Mad Max or Firefly, because that's somewhere in between those aesthetics is where the War Doctor fits.
100%. That is so accurate.
So listen, so he's wearing a leather duster that like goes to like mid-knee. And like a handkerchief that's like tied a little bit elaborately around his neck. And I think he's wearing like it looks maybe like double breasted, but I can't totally tell. Cause I did not look at a screenshot of this before I started describing this.
It is. Oh yeah. He's wearing like a double breasted leather vest.
I noticed the buttons, but I didn't notice them. I couldn't tell the material. So I don't think we ever get a close. We only get a close up of like him from like sort of like the clavicles up. So I really couldn't tell.
Yeah, here, let me drop it in the chat. It also has, like, a pocket chain that goes in both directions.
Interesting.
It is a good look. I am extremely partial to Eleven's wardrobe because, and specifically because, and, like, this is so silly because you, like, never get to see it after the first episode. But in his first episode, he steals his outfit from like the like changing room at the hospital where Rory works, because he's like still wearing this like burned up suit from when he regenerated.
Mm-hmm.
And the shirt that he steals, it's a like button down shirt that has like a floral sort of stripey pattern on it. It's really beautiful. However, the sleeve cuffs are striped, like they're, what is this, horizontally striped, like red and white. I've never seen a dress shirt like it. It looks so cool and I love it so much. And literally it's always under his suit jacket. You never see it, but I know it's there and it makes me love his outfit like just so much.
Yeah, I mean, I love Eleven's outfit because I seriously love a bow tie because I am a dandy. Surprise everyone. And like, I don't know, I think that Ten's outfit is fun, but it's really just the chucks part that really like makes the whole thing.
Yeah,
sorry Ten, you lose out in this ranking of outfits, unfortunately.
Yeah, although he does have they're the most practical of the shoes optioned for the amount of running that the Doctor does. Like 11 and 12 both wear dress shoes, and it's like that is not what you want to wear for running.
Actually, because of my fandom obsession at the time, Eleven actually wears like he's actually wearing leather boots that I remember seeing like a Tumblr post like years ago that are like, you could buy them in real life, but they're like made by one tiny factory in the UK somewhere. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't, if I'm trying to cosplay, I can't buy these boots, but they are very cute.
Yeah, no, they are, but they're still like, they're the kind of shoes that have like the rounded, skinny laces that come untied all the time. And I'm sure they're not like super grippy and they're just not as like bendy. Like if you're jogging, you want a shoe that's like,
that's true,
very flexible.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess maybe if you're a very spry Time Lord.
Yeah, no, I obviously it's fine. Like he's doing fine. It's kind of like Buffy constantly wearing like heeled boots and
yeah,
running as much as she does. And you're like, whatever, you're supernatural.
I was just going to say the lack of arch support in a pair of Chuck Taylors makes him actually not very good running shoes.
No, that's very true.
Oh, man.
However.
Love a pair of Chuck Taylors.
But TARDIS generated shoes are going to actually be like perfect. So yeah. I take it all back. It doesn't matter. The Doctor can wear any shoes and they're going to be perfect for the amount of running required.
Yeah, they're going to be out of literal space age material that is probably like walking on a cloud that we can only dream of.
Yeah. Anything else?
I don't particularly care for the Fez. That's just me. I'm like, okay, bro. Like, there are a lot of other fun hats you could be wearing, but I get it.
It's just silly. Running joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a running
But I think
joke.
It's like, can't make fun of Chuck Taylors, my dude, when you're wearing a fez. I'm sorry. It's just, no, we can't. I mean, it's funny, but I'm like, mm-mm.
Welcome to the politics section, where we talk about things that are fucked up.
My first thing is that I'm actually really glad that sort of the purpose of this episode is showing that the Doctor didn't really commit genocide, because I'm like, you're one dude deciding to commit genocide for billions of people. Like, that's fucked up. not a great thing to show, I think. So I appreciate the fact that it's like, oh, actually, we can kind of put everyone on pause and not have murdered billions of Gallifreyans. And maybe you won't be the last Time Lord. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's definitely better. I think that, like, for people who haven't watched Doctor Who, like, the context is that the Time Lords and the Daleks, which are a manufactured species by one evil dude who are, like, bred to be only evil and to want only Daleks to exist in all of time and space.
They're murder robots. I guess, I mean,
they're not robots, though. They're like weird octopi inside of a robot shell. And so they're like in a battle and they both have time travel. And so like, it's called the Time War because it's like existing at all points, but also it's like spreading out through space in a way that I think of like the Saga comics, where it's like it just keeps taking over like more and more worlds around them. So the reason behind the Doctor being like, I have to blow up Gallifrey is basically like the only way to kill all of the Daleks and like end the war was by using the moment, this magical murder like weapon of mass destruction, to just like take everything out all at once. And yeah, that's fucking heavy, and like has been the driving force behind the Doctor that we've had up until this season, so for like 7 seasons at this point. And it's really nice to have it be like, but maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I think both for his character and also just like both for the sort of like terrible implications of him like making this choice just sort of kind of like on his own, is like, who are you to make this choice, my dude? You know,
I feel like this is a fun like philosophy class question, though, because like, would you make a different choice?
I mean, that's true. I mean, it is sort of, Like, it's hard, because it's like, I think that if it's like, right, 7 billion, like, let's say 7 billion Gallifreyans versus, like, the entire universe of, like, you know, conscious beings, it's sort of like, you kind of have to make the, like, push the red button call. So, yeah. I don't know. It's just like, I would not ever want to be in that position.
Right. And unlike with the Zygon invasion parallel, there is no compromise to be had because Daleks are just literally evil. Like, you can't reach a compromise with a Dalek because, like, I think confusingly what they want is for there to be only Daleks. And then I'm like, what would you do? You would be so bored. Stop trying to kill everything that's not a Dalek, because eventually, if you're successful, you're all going to be fucking miserable because all you love is killing. Come on. Think about it.
No, they're just going to invent Dalek racism, and it's like, oh, well, you're a, like, different color Dalek, so we're going to fucking murder you. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
They're just going to turn, like, it's just kind of like, you're just going to turn on yourself, because it's like, what else, you, this is all you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't really have the foresight to think about that, to be like, all right, but if you succeed,
right,
that's really your worst nightmare.
Yeah. I honestly think that, like, probably I would also make the choice to kill all of my own people if it meant saving the rest of the universe. Because it seems like, also, given, like, what we see in this episode is that, like, the Daleks are going to win. Like, in that moment, the Daleks are going to win. And if the Time Lords are the only species, the only planet that can fight them, then, like, it's not just, like, our war is going to ravage the entire universe. It's, like, they'll just move on from Gallifrey to, like, take over everywhere else. So.
Yeah. What do you have? I mean, do you have everything in this section?
I do. Yeah. I do really, really love the line, like, if this doesn't work, at least we failed doing the right thing as opposed to succeeding in doing the wrong. I think that's really powerful.
I mean, good words to live by? I don't know. Yeah,
totally.
Honestly?
Yeah. So, in the, like, Zygon plot line, the only people in the room who end up knowing which one is the human and which is the Zygon are the two Osgoods, because one of them has the inhaler. And it's human Osgood that starts out with the inhaler and is like, shh, like, don't tell. And I think that's, like, a really lovely moment and makes me really happy.
I know, they can be friends, I guess. Because I mean, you know sort of where this plot resolves, but I'm kind of like, I guess shapeshifting into humans and living as humans is clearly the only solution to this, I guess, kind of. Is being like, we can just share planet Earth, you know. You could have thrown in clean up the oceans or something, but whatever. I mean, that's just me being like, the microplastics. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. I did think that was actually a very lovely moment. I want to talk about the Black Archives.
Okay.
Which is a shout out to, I think, something that happens in the Sarah Jane Chronicles. They bring it up. But basically, like, bunker of, like, the doctor collected stuff that UNIT is like, we actually don't want you to have. Like, we need to keep this so secret from both the doctor and other countries that, like, everyone who works here has to have their memory wiped every time they leave, which is funny. Not funny. It is a good safety precaution, honestly. But also, you would have to pay me so much money to work at a place where it's like, I'm having my first day for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like, are you kidding me? Is that dude going to be okay? Like, what is that doing to his brain? Like, when something fucked up happens and you just don't remember and they're just like, we can just pretend it didn't happen. No one needs to call HR.
Yep.
We just don't remember. And I'm like, no. No thanks. No thanks.
Yeah, agreed. So my only other thing here is just, like, the love that I have for, like, when Kate is explaining to Clara about, like, how the time, the vortex manipulator is, like, their most guarded thing. Because, and then is like, imagine Americans with the ability to rewrite history. Yeah.
I laughed out loud because I'm like, that is correct. Even though the UK is not innocent of having done shitty things in the history of the world, aka colonizing half of the planet. But I was immediately then like, yeah, someone in the U.S. government would be like, slavery's still legal. Sorry, y'all. This was the best thing that happened to the U.S. economy. We want it back. Which is, I think, true of a lot of, like, white Republicans really just want slavery back. Yeah. So, see the incarceration numbers and how much prisoners get paid to do things. It is not a lot, and it is a lot of things that they do. So, yeah, I'm like... It's kind of, it's like, it should have been a self own, but I'm like, I also understand that did because they are, it is correct. I would not trust anyone in America with the ability to time travel. 100%. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a very good joke, but also I'm like, yes.
Welcome to Editorials, where we rant about stuff. One of the things, maybe the thing that I love the most about this episode is the tangible giddiness that you see from Matt Smith about getting to act with David Tennant. It's so fucking adorable. Like, it just fills my heart like a balloon.
Yeah, I think the... It's, yeah, you're right. It's just lovely. It is very lovely. And I mean, I know that both of them were just really super stoked to be playing the Doctor as characters. So it's just like very exciting to be, for Matt Smith to be just like, I get to be on screen with David Tennant. I remember watching you on TV, man. It's great.
Yeah.
So it's just very cute.
It's so cute. So cute. The first scene in the woods is just like full of so many moments that just feel so effervescent, you know, and like, oh yeah. God, I just love it when they both put on their glasses and then like,
it's so good. It's so, so good. It's like, it's actually kind of sad that we like only see them interact in this episode, but thankfully it's an hour and 15 minutes. So
yeah,
which normally these episodes are like 45 ish minutes.
Yeah, yeah,
folks. So this is like the movie, the closest we have to a Doctor Who movie, essentially.
Yeah. Besides the actual Doctor Who movie that came out in the 90s. It's not good.
I can't imagine it is not good. All right. Yeah. My only rant is that... Okay, wait. Sorry. What are these shapeshifting aliens called?
Zygons.
The Zygons.
Our Power Rangers monsters.
I had so many names for them in my notes. Yeah, the Zygons are... Excellent. They're excellent aliens because obviously shape-shifting aliens has been done before in a lot of media. But what I think takes it the extra step is that Zygons clearly have some kind of telepathy, mind reading abilities. So it's like, even if you were to do the trope of a like, well, okay, say something that your duplicate wouldn't know. It's like, they would know that. They know everything about you. And that's sort of like scene where Zygon Osborn like reads her to filth. It's like real. I'm just like, damn, that was unnecessary, but also excellent.
Yeah, but she's like, you've got some perfectly awful memories in here.
It was so rude. It's like, that was uncalled for, but perfect, because it's like, oh yeah, like you would literally not be able to tell by talking to a Zygon if you know, they were the original person or the Zygon person. So
right.
It's an excellent threat. And it also just really makes the sort of conclusion of like, well, we're just going to wipe everyone's memories. So now you don't know who is who. Cause you wouldn't know. You would have all these memories of being a person and none of the memories of being a Zygon. So you'd be like, but I remember having that like 15th birthday party. So like,
yeah.
I always appreciate a well thought out, I'm trying to figure out what I'm trying to say. Alien? This is just well thought out, where it's like, you've done shapeshifting before, but like having like shapeshifting where it's just like almost infallible mm-hmm. is great.
Yeah.
You know, because it makes it so much scarier.
Yeah.
You know, even though despite looking like weird tentacle penises, like they're not really scary, I think.
Yeah. They really went in on the like venom sacs and the tongue thing.
which was also really funny.
It's so funny. Yeah. So listeners, there's like this ongoing kind of thing where like David Tennant's doctor has already kissed a Zygon because he like tells Queen Elizabeth that they're surprisingly good kissers, but then like is kissed again by a Zygon because like the actual Queen Elizabeth and the Zygon Queen Elizabeth both kiss him, and Matt Smith is just like ribbing him about kissing a Zygon, is like suckers, like venom sacs in the tongue, whatever. And like they say it, but then when Kate morphs, they spent their entire CGI budget on this one face morph, she morphs into a Zygon and she's just like spitting so much apparently venom out as she morphs.
It was I'm glad that they spent their CGI budget because it looked really cool, and I'm like, this is deeply effective.
Yeah, no, it's so unsettling.
And for folks, this, what we're describing, like, isn't creepy. It's, like, kind of gross. But, I mean, this shit is, like, milder than, like, some of the gore on Buffy, honestly. Yeah. So, I feel like if you're going to watch this episode or other episodes, you know, there's some deeply weird and kind of creepy ones, but I think none of them really approach, like, scary.
No.
But, yeah, that was deeply gross. And yeah. I was also just like, all right, yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to the personal section where we talk about sexy stuff.
What I really like about this episode is it's sort of implying about how much like 10 is a doctor that fucks. And I mean, 11 is Mary's River Song, so clearly he's not like the celibate hero. But we have him seducing Queen Elizabeth, you know, at this picnic, and the sort of assumption that this isn't the first time that he has kissed a Zygon mm-hmm. that Eleven mentions. And it is just correct. It is the correct it's the correct assumption about the way David Tennant is playing the Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. When he's doing his like farewell tour, because listeners, he like dies slowly of radiation poisoning, so he gets to like go on a farewell tour and like give everyone that he loves a gift. The gift that he gives Captain Jack is like a boyfriend. By which I mean he just like gives him someone's number, but like yeah. It's very much like, here's this dude I met that I think you'll like. Here you go.
I mean, but also at the end of, is it the end of his first season when he gives, where he like sends Rose to like a different universe with like a human-ish version of himself to be like, have fun with my sort of double. I'm just like, bro, what?
It's his third season.
Okay.
Because it's after the Dr. Donna. So yeah, it's.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he's definitely like the horny doctor. And
yeah, and
it's great.
And the fact that like 11 shows up and is like, I'm not here to like kink shame this threesome you're about to have, but like important things. I need your head in the game about this like sort of like important A plot. Thanks. Like he just like doesn't even question the fact that like, okay, you're doing some weird shit in the woods, that's fine. But
yeah. Oh yeah. This is very relevant to my one thing that is not in this episode, but is something that is canonically confirmed to me by this episode. So, this episode says point blank, when there's more than one doctor in a place at the same time, the time streams are out of sync and they can't remember it, right?
Yeah.
So, that's true. In A Good Man Goes to War, Rory goes to get River from Stormcage, and she's like, it's my birthday, the doctor took me ice skating, whatever, whatever. And then they're talking, and Rory's like, blah, 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 unless there's two of him. And River goes, now that's a whole different birthday. Which, very clearly, she's like, I have fucked more than one doctor at a time, right?
Which, of course.
Right. And so, and the only thing is that, like, canonically, she meets Tennant the day that she dies. So it's like, when would that have happened? However, we know that he would not remember having met her if it was when he's having a threesome with her and Eleven. So, and she acts like she already knows him in that face when they meet, even though it's their first time meeting and then she dies, or it's his first time meeting her. So he very well could have met her, had this birthday threesome with her, forgotten that it ever happened, and then met her for the first time again in silence in the library.
No, headcanon accepted. Somewhere in between all of this, Eleven's like, okay, listen, I owe my wife really big, yeah. So I'm going to need you to hop in my TARDIS.
Yeah.
Just like, go with it. You will not complain about I swear to you, this is going to be the coolest evening of our entire lives.
Yeah, and like they obviously, if you were the doctor, you would absolutely have sex with your other incarnations. Like, why would you not do that? So,
yeah.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. I just am so glad to be able to tell this theory to someone who's not Evan, who has heard me talk about it like 75 times.
I am so happy to hear this because... Yes, you're correct. And I mean, obviously, Sans in the library is crushing for a variety of reasons, but the fact that we don't ever get to see much more like banter slash flirting between David Tennant and David Tennant's doctor and River is just a travesty. Yeah. But yes.
But now we can all rest easy knowing that they fucked at least one time.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the health and science section where we research stuff. I'm going to start by asking you what you know about the Royal Ravens.
What do I know? A little bit. Okay, so I know that there is a myth slash superstition that if all of the ravens in the Tower of London like leave or like aren't there, that the British Empire will fall. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe from the past like 30 or 40 years, they've like clipped the wings of the ravens that live there. And like they're being fed, obviously, but they're sort of like kept ravens. Mm-hmm. Like the ravens, because they used to hang people and like torture people. And it used to be a prison. There would just be ravens there for free food. But now the ravens are just there to be fed and be tourist attractions slash...
superstition.
Insurance. Yeah. Insurance against the fall of the British Empire.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So that's accurate. Listeners who haven't watched the episode or missed it, at the very beginning, Kate is like eating something and like watching the ravens basically and says to Osgood, like, the ravens are looking a bit sluggish. Get Malcolm to check their batteries, which is hilarious. That's so funny. And so I want to just talk a little bit about the ravens. What you said is like spot on. They have been around since Charles II. I don't know when that was, but it was at a time when there was a royal astronomer. So I'm guessing a long time ago.
Because, that's pretty cool.
Charles II insisted that the ravens of the tower be protected because he was warned, it doesn't say by who, that the crown and the tower itself would fall if they left. And it says, the order was given against the wishes of his astronomer, who complained that the ravens impeded the business of his observatory.
So, okay. So I'm definitely imagining some dude in a robe who's like, I'm trying to like observe the stars, but I'm being harassed by like an entire murder of crows. What is unkindness? Is it unkindness,
yes,
of ravens?
Yes.
I'm being harassed by an entire unkindness of ravens because ravens are smart. And I'm like, can we just get rid of these guys? And he's like, no, no, we cannot.
Right. Yes. So, yeah, I fucking love this. I wish I had known this before I went to London so that I could have seen them. But there's a royal raven master, and that is the only person who is allowed to go near the ravens. Their wings are clipped, but they can still fly. So they're not, like, super kept ravens. They have, like, it says some have gone absent without leave in the past. And then sometimes they get fired.
Oh my God.
A raven named George was dismissed because he was eating television aerials.
Wow.
I guess he was, like, you know, a disappointment to the throne, so they had to fire.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And also, I just think this is incredible. They're fed twice a day by the Raven Master. They dine on a special diet of mice, chicks, rats, and assorted raw meats. But as a special treat, they're given biscuits soaked in blood.
Oh my God. So God.
No.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. I wish it was my job.
You would make such a good Raven Master.
Oh my God. I know.
This is why, just United States, come on. Why can't we have more fun things, honestly?
This is a country with no chill. This country has zero chill.
It's true.
I mean, maybe arguably the UK also has zero chill, honestly. So.
They at least have some whimsy, though, you know?
Yeah.
All right. We did it.
We did it.
We did it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode. Check the show notes for all the things. Do you want to know the names of the current ravens before we wrap up? All right.
I sure do.
So the current ravens are Jubilee, Harris, Grip, Aaron, Poppy, Georgie, Edgar, and Branwyn.
I love them.